So today's kind of a one-off Sunday. It's Super Bowl Sunday. I'm Tim Ward. If I didn't get a chance to meet you when you came in, I'm the pastor here at Restoration. And I love Super Bowl Sunday, even though I'm not a big fan of professional sports, right? I don't love the idea that people get paid to play sports, right? That's something that I'm kind of like, But I love Super Bowl Sunday for two of the reasons that were mentioned up there. I love to eat, and I love the commercials, right? So that's why I watch the Super Bowl. Now, I want to get you riled up just a little bit this morning. Who here, I mean, if this is even a question, who's for the Patriots tonight? Like, oh, y'all are so quiet. Like, give a little energy. Who's for the Patriots tonight? All right, who is rooting for the Eagles tonight? Who doesn't care? Now, that's a real shame, right? This is a big game. It's really important. If you're an Eagles fan, you've been longing for this day, right? It's really important that it's here. I was searching on Facebook this week and found a map to sort of describe who was rooting for whom for this game. And this is the map that I found. The green shows people rooting for the Eagles, and the red shows those rooting for the Patriots. I don't know what's going on in Texas, but there are a few folk that are rooting for the Patriots. But in Dallas, right? So, I wanna think about football a little bit today, but for an analogy for life, and I wanna journey with you a little bit this morning. So there are 32 teams, right, in the NFL, and when they start the season, you have to imagine that each team starts with a little bit of hope, right? Each team starts with this could be our year. Even if everybody is telling them this is not your year, each team goes, maybe this is us. And they get prepared for that. I wonder, when we're thinking about these two teams who are playing tonight, what it was like to win their last playoff game. Can you imagine what it was like in the locker room afterwards? The conversation, the excitement, maybe even going into that playoff game, the joy, the we've got this, we're going to win this. The Super Bowl was much closer inside at that point, is that right? I mean, they really could feel it. And then go back a few games. I wonder what it was like during regular season when they were winning and what that felt like. Or go back a little bit earlier to even preseason. These teams were all going at it as if they might be able to win. They showed up every day and they said, we're going to train as if we might win, right? That's the whole point, right? That's what they're getting paid to do. They're not getting paid just to entertain. They're getting paid to win. That's really important because when they win, their leagues make more money, right? Their teams make more money. That's what the idea is here. And they have more fun when they win. So I've been thinking a lot about this idea of training lately. I have started running. I've told many of you this, but I've picked up running, and that's something that gives me a lot of life. But I was thinking back the other day to the first time back in last, I don't know, April, May, or June, when I told Jackson I was going to go for a run with him one day. Jackson's our oldest. He just turned 11 yesterday. And I said, Jackson, let's go for a run. So we get outside and we're running to the school. And I promise you guys, we were not a half a mile in. And I literally thought I was going to die. Like, I thought my life was over. My poor son, he's got to figure out how to make it home, right? It's going to be terrible. And we're running up the hill. And of course, he's just talking like normal, you know, never run in his life, just running up the hill. All's good. And we get there and we come back. And I vowed to myself that day that I wanted to do more. Like, I wanted to run more. So the way that I did it was I didn't find any plan. I didn't find the important couch to 5K plan, which a lot of people do. I just said I'm going to add a tenth of a mile every day. Like, every day I'm going to run an extra tenth of a mile. And I'm going to do this. And it got better. On Friday, I ran 6 miles, right? So it got better. Oh, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. But so I signed up, I trained, I signed up for the Turkey Trot with Life with Cancer and ran that. That went really well. I was really happy with that, right? That was fun. And then I did this really terrible thing, and it's my fault because I encouraged some of you to do it with me. I signed up for the Reston Sprint Triathlon, okay? I'm all about the community. The community is really important to me, but what was I thinking? Because on Monday, I got in the swimming pool, right? I thought, it's a 400-meter swim. Like, what's the big deal? So I took the kids, got over to the swimming pool, and like 4 laps in, I said, I'm going to die, right? This is awful. I mean, literally, I said, how am I going to do this? And I thought about it, and I said, wait a second. I remember when I started running. I said, how am I going to do this? And every day, I just added a little bit more. So now, with swimming, I'll just add a little bit more. And I will train more and more. Now, there's a third component to that, which is biking. And we're not even going to have that conversation right now. So we're going to get there. My point is to say training is important. Training is part of the story. We look at these athletes and we say, oh, they're incredible athletes. And what we don't think about often is the backstory, the work that had to be done to get to the point where they were. I had a conversation with my mother-in-law. We were on a trip together, and she said, yeah, don't even tell me you don't hate running. She said, I hated running. I absolutely hated it. And I said, you know what? At times, the training can be boring, right? Let's name that and let's acknowledge that. Anybody who tells you that every time they go out training for something, it gives them life and joy is lying to you, okay? That is not true. Sometimes the training can be boring. But what I have found is at the end of every run, at the end of every time I put in that effort, I feel better. I'm glad that I did it, and I'm glad that I took the time to do the work that I did. So the training can be boring, but I would say that the training is everything. Without the training, I cannot imagine going to do the rest and sprint in June and just getting out there and winging it. I can't imagine that. If my first time swimming was at the sprint triathlon, y'all, it would have been pitiful, okay? It might still be pitiful, but it would have been real, real, real bad, because the training is important. So I want to name that this morning. I want to talk about this idea of training. And I also want to say training is gradual. Remember I said I added like a tenth of a mile every day? If I had tried to run 5 miles that first day, it would have never happened for me, right? Training is gradual. So I want to look this morning at our own life, at our own faith. I want to talk about this concept of training and sort of our journey that we do together. Paul is one of the great writers in the New Testament, right? One of the folks that we read who writes a lot of letters to churches. And almost every letter that he writes to these communities is actually about training. Do you realize that? It's about the way that they can do these things that will help them build community with one another, but it requires them to do some things, to sand some of their edges, to sand some of their sharp spots, to do things that they might not normally do. And in this letter that he writes to the Corinthians, in the first letter to the people of Corinth, he's writing them about one specific topic that's really important. This whole letter is about training so that you will be one. Training so that you will be unified. Actually, when I was thinking about the Super Bowl, it's really, really important that they play well together, right? Some of you may have heard of this little basketball team right now that's doing really well called the University of Virginia. You may have heard of them. Who? Did you hear that? Who? But I will tell you, they play seamlessly together. It is beautiful to watch them play basketball because they play so well together. The training is there. So I want to look at this passage in 1 Corinthians, and I want to start here with verse 24 that says this: Do you not know that in a race the runners all compete, but only one receives the prize? Run in such a way that you may win it. It seems that verse 24 sort of begins with this rhetorical question, perhaps a rhetorical question that we might struggle with in our Northern Virginia context today. Do you realize that not everybody gets a prize? Right? That's what he says. Do you realize that at the end of the race, only one person's going to cross the line first? Not everybody's going to get a medal. Sometimes in our culture today, we feel the need to give. We just did that. Did you see that? The 1,000-point final question? Everybody wins, right? Everybody gets a medal. Paul says, do you realize that you should run the race in such a way that you may win it? See, for Paul, it seems to me that it's more important in the way that we run the race than the outcome. Did you hear that? Run in such a way that you may win it. And I think there's a real big connection to our faith here. Paul says that we should exercise, and that's really what he's talking about to the community, exercise your faith in such a way that the winner might exercise. Exercise as if it's important. Do things that help you push towards growing in your faith. Now notice that for Paul, the aim isn't so much about the end prize actually. It's about the way that we run the race. It's about the way that we journey together. Now, there's a little bit of a challenge in this connection here, because if we run the race in such a way that we're going to win the prize, it makes us think that our faith is about all the things that we do. And if we do all the right things, we will get this great, wonderful thing in the kingdom of God. Now, Paul deals with that in the next section of the passage, because that's not the way I understand it. Let's look a little further. This is what he's saying. Athletes exercise self-control in all things. They do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable one. So I do not run aimlessly, nor do I box as though beating the air. But I punish my body and enslave it, so that after proclaiming to others, I myself should not be disqualified. So he has all these parallels here that he gives between athletes and training and in our faith and the importance of that. And he says, it's not the victory or the prize that matters. Instead, he highlights this, which I think is really important. Athletes exercise self-control in all things. What he's talking about right now is this thing that we hope for, this thing that we long for, this deep connection with God that we work towards, not because it gets us an extra gold star, not because we get to take home the trophy, but because ultimately what it means is that life that we were designed to live in deep connection with God. That's what Paul is calling the community to do for one another, connected with one another, pushing towards the prize. And he says, exercise self-control. That remains at the center of this image that he gives us, self-control. I don't know about you, but I could use a little more self-control in my life. And Paul says to them, at the center of this training and this focus is self-control. It's dedication. Susan and I used to do these workouts, I don't recommend them, called P90X3, right? And we used to do these, and one of the things that the guy Tony would say, he would talk about self-control and the importance of your whole body getting a workout, which meant every day you were going to do something different because it was important to stay focused. And I think, again, there's that connection to our faith there. It's important for us to stay focused on it. I have found that in my own life, when I put my journey and my faith on the back burner, it stays there. It stays there. It doesn't just naturally surface. I have to choose to do something about it. Now, I think it's easy for us to look at this whole metaphor about an athlete and say, we can do all of this ourselves, right? I got it. All I have to do is train. If I just do it, I'll be fine. But remember, do you remember what the focus of the whole letter Paul was writing to the people was? Unity. Doing it together. He's writing to the church as a whole. He's not driving to a world where we're alone in developing our faith. I regularly will talk to people about the church, and they'll say, well, I don't need the church. I can just stay home and do it all by myself. I can do it without anybody else. And I think the challenge with that is not that I think that's bad. It's not that I think people are not enough if they do that. I actually think we were designed to do this in community. Right? If we read through the Bible, if we look at our tradition, if we look at our experience, it comes out of community. Doing this together with other people. And that's what we're pushed towards. And think about athletes. I mean, yeah, you can look at a football team and say, well, none of them train alone. They train in community, yes. But I would even go down to athletics that you say are like solo athletics. I can guarantee you that Michael Phelps does not do it all on his own. I can guarantee you that there is a community of people around him. Not only is there his trainer, there are other people that swim with him and push him and train him. There's his family, right? His mom. Have you seen pictures of his mom when you watch the Olympics? His sister, they're so encouraging because training alone is not what it's about. No athlete trains in isolation by themselves. So I want to talk this morning about the importance of community in training and our faith. And we're going to look at this morning through the lens of life groups. Jake talked a little bit about life groups, and I want to talk about sort of the value in those and the importance of those, because I so deeply believe in this idea of training in community. So here are some things that come out of life groups that are important. We spend time together to learn, to grow, to build community, to have other people there for us when we can't do it ourselves, and to learn from one another. So I want to talk through those things and the benefits that come out of a life group this morning. The first is this idea of knowledge. I have been told by many people that the greatest workers that you have who work for you are people that want to continuously learn. Is that true? People who want to continuously grow, who don't think they've figured it all out. I think our faith is very similar to that. If someone comes to you and says, don't worry, I know it all, run for the hills, right? Get away from them, because we always have more to learn. We always have more to grow. So there's a piece of this idea in our life groups where we can grow in our knowledge of who God is, grow in our knowledge of the nature of God. I'm thinking back to this last life group that I've been a part of, where we studied another one of Adam Hamilton's books, actually, Making Sense of the Bible. And I remember sitting through that group and sort of watching the knowledge about God and about the nature of God and about the Bible come to life. And to see people go, oh, I'd never known that. I'd never seen that. I'd never learned that. There's an importance in the midst of that community where we can help one another learn different things, and that's the knowledge piece. There's another piece I think that's really important about life groups, though, and that's perspective. Right? I don't know about you, but I don't want to surround myself with people who all think exactly the way that I do. That is no fun. Right? I want perspective from people who think differently. I have never been part of a life group that's groupthink, right? Where everybody says the same thing and we all think the same. And back to that last life group we did with Making Sense of the Bible, we all came at it from a different place, from different perspectives. But I want to give you an example that happened this last 2 weeks to me. I had a conversation with another pastor who is in a different place than I am on some social issues. It was a really good conversation, and we were talking, and he said, hey, here are my thoughts. And I said, okay, great, here are my thoughts. And we got to the end of the conversation, and we were still friends, right? So that's important. But we got to the end of the conversation, and he said, hey, I'm really grateful to be in a church with you. And I said, what do you mean by that? He says, it's better when we're in a church where we don't all agree. It's better when we're in a place where we have different perspectives and different conversations on stuff. And he said, I'm willing to hold on to that more importantly than our disagreements. I'm willing to hold on that focus of unity. And I think that's what life groups bring us. If you're in a life group and somebody tells you, hey, we all have to think this way, we all have to do this thing, that's not right. Life groups bring us many different perspectives from different people. And here's the third thing. Life groups bring us community. If you're a person that just needs community, right, which I think is all of us, needs people to be around you, to connect with you, to care about you, sign up for a life group, because that's what you'll get. I was having a conversation a few weeks ago with somebody who was really sick in our church, and I said, hey, do you need anything? Is there anything I can do for you? And they said, no, my group's got it. They've got me. They're going to drive me a couple of places. They've got a couple of meals for me, and they're going to help me, because that's what life groups should be in the midst of community. I'm going to leave you with this story this morning before I ask you to do something. NASA had a recent job posting for a planetary protection officer, right? And what that is, I didn't know what that was. But that's a person that's responsible for the microbial footprint of humans during interplanetary exploration. Try to say that 5 times fast. But that's the job. But it's a pretty cool job. Right? Lots and lots of buzz got out about this job. It was all over the internet. People saw it everywhere, and people got really, really excited about it. Now, the problem is, one of the prerequisites is that you're like a genius in almost every science possible, right? Physics, biology, mathematics, you name it, chemistry. You have to be really, really smart. But it didn't stop this one guy from applying. He saw all these things. A guy named Jack Davis applied for the job. Now, here's the interesting thing about Jack Davis. He's 9 years old. And he applied for this position. I loved this story when I read it. And he wrote this in his handwritten application to NASA, which they received. He said this, I may be 9, but I think I would be fit for the job. One of the reasons is my sister says I'm an alien. Also, I've seen almost all the space movies and alien movies I can see. Then he then cited his plans to go and watch Men in Black as further reason why he should get the job. He said, I'm young, get this, you're going to love this, so I can learn to think like an alien, right? Like I can pick up on that because young people can do that quickly. Now, he did not actually get the job offer. But the guy who was the director of this department found this fascinating. He found it really interesting, so he replied to his job application. And this is what he wrote. Jim Green, who's the NASA's director of planetary science, wrote this. We're always looking for bright future scientists and engineers to help us out. So I hope you'll study hard and do well in school. We hope to see you here at NASA one of these days. He told the kid, we want you, but get your training. Go back and do the work. He didn't say, all right, you got the job, because every cute 9-year-old who fills out an application gets a job. He said, go and do the work. Do the training and then come back, and we look forward to having you here one day. I mean, think about the message that that sends to a 9-year-old. I want my kids to apply for every NASA job possible right now, right? I want somebody to tell my kids, do your work, get your training. The training is important. So I gave you one way. There are lots of ways we can train in our faith. There are lots of things that can push us closer to God. And I gave you one this morning that I want to encourage you to think about. I want to encourage you to think about joining a group. It'll last 5 or 6 weeks here at Restoration, starting on the 18th and the week beyond. We have 7 groups that are going on, 7 or 8. And I want to encourage you to sign up for one. You have a piece of paper on your seat. I want to invite you to take that out. As Jake said, we're going to be studying and looking at this book, Creed by Adam Hamilton, which basically creed means faith, right, your belief. And we're going to walk through that in worship and in the study. But I want to encourage you to think about signing up for one of these groups. You have the paper on your seat. If you're a guest with us this morning, you're welcome to sign up. You're not committing yourself. This is saying I'm interested. But we have a group Sunday that happens right after worship. Every Sunday, there's a group. It's a drop-in. You can join that. It's going to be at Calypso's. That's not at Forest Edge. It's going to be at Calypso's, which is over at Lake Ann. And they talk about the sermon, which works out perfectly for this group. There's a group at noon that's going to be meeting for young families. There's a group on Mondays at 7 p.m. over at my office at Lake Ann, which will be for women. There's a group Tuesday, 7 p.m. at my office, which will be picking up from the group that started Real Talk, but anyone is welcome to join. Also Tuesday evenings at Amy's house, young professionals will meet. Wednesdays, there's another group meeting at our office over at Lake Ann at 7 p.m., and then Wednesdays, there's a men's group meeting as well. There's a lot of options here, and I want to encourage you to sign up for one. It's just 5 or 6 weeks. Sign up for one this morning. Think about being in a community where people will help you with your training, will love you, and will meet you where you are. I want to encourage you just to take a minute to fill out that card this morning. If you're already in a group, please still sign up. It's really helpful for us if you sign up and say, hey, I'm interested. We're going to have baskets sitting on that table over there where the gift bags are, where you can place one in the basket when you leave. But I want to encourage you to sign up for a group. Be in a place where you can intentionally train. Run as if you're going to win the prize. And I believe God will do something really, really powerful.